Lying in the dark on the other side of the wall, he could almost divine where she was being touched. At first, it was her feet, surely, and it tickled her because she giggled. It must have been only the external portions of her body, for she laughed gaily, lightly. The man with her must have been touching her ribs, her shoulders, her arms, her legs. Suddenly, her laughter changed. It was modulated as if she were being slightly hurt, and it was that she was growing vulnerable. He could tell. She laughed like someone plunging into too cold water and gasping, and then feeling the warm reaction and enjoying the new sensation. She laughed as if pleasure were new and beginning to invade her. "Ah, ah," came her voice in the darkness. If he could have seen her move, he would not have been as clearly aware of her pleasure. He felt this pleasure of hers rippling through his muscles. The walls were so thin he could feel it all in his body. "Ah, ah." There was a silence. This silence disturbed the Portuguese more than anything. What could keep her so still after her rippling and open pleasure? What caress could silence her suddenly as if too profound to cause an exterior proof of joy? He tried to divine. He knew she was naked, for he had heard her say, "Let's take all our clothes off." What was the man doing to her? No sound. The Portuguese felt ripples covering his strong, dark body. He felt close to a mystery. He expected her to cry out any moment from uncontainable ecstasy. Instead, there came out of the darkness a long, prolonged, low laughter. Guttural, rich, low, obscene. The other mouth. Surely the man had opened his way into the other mouth, the luxuriant, thick, rich, sexual mouth she carried almost exposed for everyone to see in her twin mouth of her face, for everyone to see the thickness and fullness of her sexual feelings, ripe and open and red.
I'm Paul Heron, and this is episode 27 of the On Evening podcast. We've just listened to Thurlow Holmes reading a portion of Oletra's Erotica by Anais Nin, which has just been released as an audiobook on Audible.com, iTunes, and Amazon. Today, I will try to get into the head of an erotica reader as she interprets the words of an author who penned them nearly 80 years ago. Thurlow, welcome to the Anais Nin podcast.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm really excited to be here.
I have to ask, what did it feel like reading that passage from Life in Provincetown at the beginning of the show? You sound pretty convincing.
Thank you. Yeah. This is one of the first books that I just really read out loud as I was reading it. So really, I'm delighted to hear you say it sounds convincing, because I was taking this kind of as it came at me, so I could really imagine myself in the room, in there with the characters. And so I appreciate that. Thank you, Paul.
It's an interesting approach just to take it as it comes. So did you get into the stories? Did you feel anything while you're reading them?
I absolutely did. In fact, if you recall, there were several times during our edits that you would send me back comments and you would say things like, "Okay, maybe we could slow this down a little bit." Do you recall that?
Yes.
So you would say, "Let's slow this down." And, you know, on my side of things, I was thinking, Yeah, I guess the more excited I get, the faster I tend to read, and the faster, and suddenly we were carried away there. And so I really appreciated you kind of reining me back in, because again, you know, to really just be reading this as it came at me. And what you have to understand too, for your listeners as well, I'm in a recording studio. So I'm in, you know, a small little space by myself reading this, and, you know, without an audience. And so yes, you get into it, and there are those moments where you read the words and you go, "Oh, what did that character just, oh, oh, you know, so yeah, like I say, I'm not sure I would make it a practice just to read the book as it comes at you, these words, but Anais Nin's words, they really do just roll off the page and you get swept up in the moment. Certainly, you know, hopefully your listeners have read her work too. You know, it's the same thing. I'm putting my voice to it, but you know, these words and these scenarios that she just lulls you into, she's an amazing writer. She really is.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. It's sort of like going on rough rapids, you know, where it starts out nice and calm, and then suddenly you're about to go over the falls, you know what I mean? And so I understand exactly where you're coming from. And she was such a craftsman at developing stories. And what amazes me is that, you know, you talk about just reading as it came. I think that she basically just wrote it as it came. You know, she didn't spend a lot of time writing her erotica. She was just in it for the money. So she was just dashing these stories off, and yet they're so well constructed. And I should add, and I've mentioned this before, I did nothing with editing this except for grammatical things. So I just let her present herself exactly as she wrote it back in 1940 or 41 or whenever it was, probably about 41 or 42, I'm guessing, that she originally wrote these stories. I take it you've read quite a bit of erotica. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, you are right. You know, and that kind of makes me think, actually, that of another fun little behind-the-scenes story. When you first sent me the manuscript before we, you know, finalized our deal that I would be the reader for these portions of the work, somebody, you'd sent me the manuscript and said, you know, now have a look and just, you know, tell us this work. There are some things in here maybe not everybody would be comfortable with. And I thought, oh, come on, I've read more erotica, and I've read erotica that involves aliens and monsters and you know, this is fine. And then again, as I started reading her book, I went, okay, all right. So whether it was conscious or not, I really think maybe that element of surprise and quite frankly, rawness in her work is what led me, I guess, you know, to read it, as I said, the way I did, just as it came at me. So this was different than other erotica I've read, because, you know, especially as you start thinking about Anais Nin and her doing this in the 1940s, wow, yeah. You know, she was risking everything, but she doesn't come off as somebody who seems like she really thought, oh, I'm risking everything. As you say, she did it. She dashed it off. She did it. It was unabashed. Here's what it is. And I think that's what's so powerful about her work, frankly.
Yeah. And, you know, we should put a little background on that. The reason she was risking everything was because of the censorship laws back then, the obscenity laws. She was basically a criminal, and she could have been prosecuted as a criminal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and imagine that, you know, because again, for readers of her work, you know, I have to say there are certainly elements of her work and her writing that you can absolutely relate to, right? Or go, oh yeah, you know, and to think that having that thought or expressing that thought or acting on that thought, it's yeah, what she would have faced, and you know, to some extent, there'd be repercussions still today, right?
Yes. Well, Elytras had a rocky start, starting with Amazon, who basically censored it from the website by making it unsearchable. And so a big hoo-ha-ha came up, mostly in the media, before they finally changed their minds. They didn't say it in these words, but they said, this book is so filthy, you know, it's so immoral that we cannot present this to the public. Now, I have a confession. I'm not the one that sent you the manuscript. The person who sent you the manuscript was actually the person who I had made a deal with to read the book in the first place. I'm not going to mention any names, but she's a big-time erotica reader with a huge following. She, I thought, was the perfect person to do this, and she was an early supporter of the book. And so, you know, the only reason I decided to do an audiobook in the first place and fought for the right to do so was because of her. I should also mention that my contract gave me until April 11th of this year to sign a deal with somebody to do the audiobook. Otherwise, I would lose the audio rights to the book altogether, and it wouldn't even happen. So in late March, I hadn't heard from her in a while, and suddenly she writes me this email and says that her producer had such a problem with some of the stories in the book that he convinced her to not do it. And so I don't hold this against her at all. You know, this was, you know, between her and her producer, and blood is thicker than water and all of that. So it's not a problem. But suddenly here I am in late March. I only have to April 11th to get this deal done. And I've got no one. And I don't even know the first thing about how to find someone, since I'm a neophyte in the audiobook world. So I wrote to her and asked her, could you please help me find some people? And so she did. And bless her for that, you know. So she got a bunch of auditions, and yours was head and shoulders above all the others. As far as I'm concerned, you have not only met but exceeded what I was expecting.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That's, wow. You know, you never know how these things come to be. Wow. I'm hearing this story for the first time. I'm thinking, holy smokes. Okay.
And the day that we signed our contract between you and me was on April 11th. It was the exact same day that I would have lost the rights. So it was really, the whole thing was a blessing in disguise. And I have absolutely zero regrets about how it happened.
Well, excellent. Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, it's in that serendipitous, right? How things fall apart, but pieces fall into place and click, and here we are, and there's a wonderful book now for your listeners to enjoy, and I certainly got to know a lot more about Anaïs Nin and her work through this too. So yeah, yay, it all works out in the end. Here's our happy ending, Paul.
Well said. Well said.
Here we are.
In the book, Oletras, what story or stories were your favorites?
I really like the first one, frankly, you know, the opening where, you know, you have this woman, this sensual woman, and she's writing about, you know, people on the street looking at this woman and judging her, and her rosy red mouth must be the same as her, you know, and I'm reading this again as it comes at me. Again, I could just get kind of caught up because, you know, as a woman and you walk down the street and people look and people make assumptions and judgments and comments and, you know, gosh. So I, you know, was able really immediately to kind of get into that. And then to hear, you know, the neighbor, you know, next door who would just listen, you know, and listen in, and that became so intimate that he knew what was being done to her by the sound of her reactions. And that was I have to say, you know, I do this work for selfish reasons, probably number one. It's a great creative outlet. But it's also, something where I learn new things, you know, not just about the subject matter, but about, you know, the authors themselves and about the producers and the folks I meet through this work. But I've got to tell you that one, the really selfish bonus is, I say to my husband all the time, I'm very happily married, and say to my husband all the time, like, okay, this erotica reading is maybe one of the best things for our marriage, you know, and it's so much better than an affair, you know. Cut me off here when it's TMI and you want to censor the podcast too, but you know, the whole sensuality of it and like how you react and what your partner is, you know, doing or whispering, or, you know, it just kind of tuned me in on a whole new level. So, you know, thank you, Anaïs Nin.
I think a lot of people would thank her for various things, and good sex is one of them.
There you are. Well, you know, not only just good sex, but like this heightened awareness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the story where you know, you have somebody else watching somebody on the beach, and she thought she was alone. She didn't go out there to you know, to masturbate, you know, with an audience, certainly knowingly, you know, and so like, you know, it's all about like these moments that, that are our own or we think are our own. And would she have done the same things if she knew she had an audience?
Yeah.
Chances are no, but maybe the really brazen of us would have, you know, and do you apply, you know, I don't, it's just, there's so much, I'm probably going too far down the road in terms of, you know, character analysis, you know, like, would she have done this? Well, maybe, maybe not. Well, was she really brazen? Was she brave? Was she, it just, you know, again, it's just powerful stuff. Yeah. And I'm really glad, you know, the story you told about how I came to read this, you know, even that, that's just like icing on the cake, because I'm really glad I had the opportunity to read this, this work for your listeners.
Oh, I am too. And they will be happy. No question about it. Anais had experience in Provincetown, and I've been to Provincetown, and I took a lot away from being there. And I really believe that it was a great setting for the first book of the two that make up Oletres, and the little shacks on the beach and the dunes and so on and so forth, you know, these kinds of things that she used as a background to all these stories. You know, some of it is autobiographical, but a lot of it's not. There's a good deal of, I think, true fiction in these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even as you think, you know, because as you talk about, you know, the shacks and the dunes, and I've not been to Provincetown, but I've been to, you know, other places where, again, I think you have a geographical association and, again, can put yourself right in that setting or scenario. And, you know, there are things, too, that, you know, I think if, you know, imagine, you know, romantic stroll down the beach, but, you know, if you're with your husband or you're, you know, on a date or you're, you know, out there by yourself and it's all about introspection and such like this, and you see these dunes and these opportunities and could you sneak around the corner and would you do, it just, again, I think, you know, that setting, whether it was autobiographical or as you say, you know, not so much, it just all clicks together, which, again, makes her work really magical.
Yeah. I've got to ask you, how did you get into this business in the first place of reading erotica? I mean, what led you down the road?
Well, you know, like so many things, someone simply asked me.
Oh, okay.
You know, I read non-erotica books under another name, and somebody had come across those samples and you know, bits and pieces, and reached out and said, hey, would you be willing to read, you know, XYZ? And I said, yeah, you know what, sure, send it on over. Let me see what we can do here. And then as I was reading it, I thought, you know, I might want to keep this separate from the other readings. And, you know, there are a number of reasons for that. But, yeah, so I did the first, and then all of a sudden, pow, you know, and it's kind of funny because it's not like I really ever thought, wow, my voice is so erotic, it's just not something that drifts through your mind. But yeah, it turns out, my voice resonated for this genre. And so really things have just kind of kept coming in. And now I'll bet the erotica reads outpace the non-erotica readings probably by about 4 or 5 to 1, frankly, in what I do. You know, and it's you know, with erotica, I've done things where, you know, that are long kind of anthologies. I've done short stories, you know, like with Oletres, you know, there are these little chapters and stories within stories that, you know, may or may not all tie together ultimately. And that's a lot of fun because that's something, again, I can just kind of steal away to the studio, read it, enjoy it, and then come back for more with the next session. So yeah, it's and at this point, it's really just kind of feeding itself, which is a delightful thing to have happen.
Yeah. And now you mentioned having to keep it separate from your non-erotica reading.
I do a lot of corporate voiceover work too. And so, you know, there are some companies who might not be super pleased to have the voice for their XYZ product associated with, you know, a read or, you know, some of, you know, to your point, you know, that Amazon was going to censor Oletres. You know, there's still again, which is why it's so mind-blowing what she was doing in 1940 because of the censorship laws. And as I mentioned earlier in the interview, some of that still applies today, right? So I try and keep it separate so that there's not going to be an element of my employers who have objections to it. And frankly, I look at it as, you know, this is mine. This is my little thing. This is, I get to do this and be this and feel this. And it doesn't mean I have to talk about it, you know, in daily conversation. You know, walking down the street, the conversation I have is not going to be about, you know, whether it's about eroticism or romanticism even, you know. So this is, you know, I read something online where somebody said, you know, the great thing about, in particularly the audiobook format, you know, when 50 Shades of Grey came out and everybody, there was a big joke about getting book covers, right? So people would know you were reading 50 Shades of Grey if you're sitting on the bus, or moms wouldn't have to divulge at the soccer game that they're reading 50 Shades of Grey on the sidelines, right?
Yeah.
But we all did, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in the audiobook format, you don't have that book cover. You know, it's on your, you know, whether it's your iPod or, you know, you're plugged into, you know, whatever, however you're listening to it, it's like your own little secret.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool,
yeah.
You know, and it's funny because this person online said, you know, you never know what someone's listening to at the gym. And I'm thinking, holy smokes, if I'd been on, you know, like I don't get on these, so I don't even know what it's called, but is it the treadmill, right?
Mm.
Where you're walking. If I'd been reading Olatris, and again, you know, you had to keep telling me to slow down the pace of the reading because I was getting all excited, man, I'd have been flying on that treadmill if I was listening to this at the gym.
Never thought of Olatris as being a workout kind of listen,
yeah.
You know, it's pretty funny.
It might be a whole new level for you people.
Yeah. I get why you use different names for your work. You told me that Thurlow Holmes is not your real name. I still don't know what it is, by the way, but I'm not going to ask you here.
So, you could ask. I just wouldn't tell.
Okay.
So, you know, and the other thing about, you know, using Thurlow Holmes, you know, when I come into the studio to do an erotica read, that's who I get to be.
Mm.
You know, okay. So it's almost like getting into a character. So it really, I think, helps the read by having that. You know, it's kind of its own little preparation. You know, when I read the first opening, you know, this is Olatris by Anaïs Nin, read to you by Thurlow Holmes. That's my own little cue and signal to myself, like, okay, here we go.
So, yeah, it's like a different persona. Yeah,
yeah, I'm not this sexy in real life.
Yeah, well, it comes through in the reading. Now, I probably should mention that I'm on the trail of some undiscovered Nin erotica.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say undiscovered, I mean, yeah, it's like totally undiscovered, and I've not discovered it. So, but I'm trying to find people who know something or know somebody who does know somebody who does know something. And so,
uh-huh.
In other words, I'm playing detective right now, which is sort of what I had to do with Olatris. I had to play detective and track it down, which was, by the way, a very exciting thing to do, to actually find it. You know, so it's like an adventure going in search of these sorts of things. Because I'm always going out and seeking, you know, things that should never be discovered.
Oh, we're so glad you did, though. It's like the ultimate treasure, right? Seriously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It truly is.
That's fantastic. And you know, whatever you discover, oh my goodness, you know, I'll be out here now anxiously awaiting that next discovery as well. You know, there were so many, you know, I didn't really know this author beforehand. I, you know, honestly, like the what I knew about her came from, you know, feminist studies or women and gender studies or sexuality studies in, you know, my college days, which, you know, was a fair time ago, you know. But, you know, I do remember, though, this one quote, and I always remembered it. Well, because, you know, I'm sorry to kind of divert here, but back in, I think it was like the 80s or something like that, there was this perfume that came out, and it was called Anaïs Anaïs.
Mm.
I don't know if do you okay? And I just remember it coming out, and people being like, "How do Anis? And what is what? No, it's Anaïs Anaïs." And blah. So I knew the first name, so that name kind of sticks with you. So then when I'm in these classes and they're talking about Anaïs Nin as the godmother of erotica, and I was like, oh, okay, that's Anais. Okay, I know how to spell her first name, you know. But she had this quote I remember from college. It said, life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's pretty awesome, right? Oh, doesn't that just want you make you go out and conquer the day and you, Indiana Jones of literature, to go out and find more for us, you know, open these doors, reveal it to us.
Well, that's what I do. I mean, that's my thing. And so I'm hoping that I will discover something in the future, hopefully near future. And if I do...
Mm-hmm. I hope you do, too. And I hope you call me to read it.
Oh, I was just going to say that. Keep your line open.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, that it would be my honor and privilege.
Well, I hope that day comes. And in the meantime, we can all enjoy your reading of O Lettres Erotica by Anais Nin. Thurlow, I want to thank you so much for appearing on the show. And I hope we can do this again soon.
I certainly hope so, too. Paul, thank you very much. Thanks for what you do. Thanks for what you give us as readers and as listeners. And yeah, here's to the next one.
All right. Thank you.
The audiobook version of O Lettres Erotica by Anais Nin can be found on Audible.com, iTunes, and Amazon. The print and digital versions of the book are also available. This has been the Anais Nin Podcast. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.